Thank you very much for coming on. We've met. I met you at the Trinity Western Open House a few months ago, and you know, I invited you on my podcast, and you decided to come, and here we are.
Yeah.
So thank you, I appreciate you coming on, and you. I'll explain this how I see it, and then you correct me.
Sounds good.
So you are the president of TWUSA, which is Trinity Western University Student Association.
Exactly.
And what exactly is this association and what does it do?
Yeah, so the Student Association, it's a representative body of all the undergraduate students. So very similar to what you would have in high school, where you'd have, I grew up in the States and we had ASB, I forget what that stands for, but student body basically. So okay. Everyone who has a class, they pay a tuition fee for a student association. And with that fee, it's all kind of pooled together for each of the students and distributed out for different clubs, for different student initiatives, things like that through the Student Association, which I represent. So my role as president is to then represent all the Trinity Western University students, which is a big task, but it's something I love doing. I love advocating for people and just getting the chance to hear what their voices and concerns are and just pursue that in the best interest of students.
Well, let's cycle back to your journey and how you got to where you are. Mm-hmm. But I do want to touch upon the Peace Summit that you went to a few months ago and you will be going to again very soon. What is a Peace Summit and what were you doing there?
Yeah, so I attended the Global Peace Summit, which happened in January of this year through Humanitarian Affairs Asia. And originally, I have to be honest, when I was there and I saw the application, which I was connected through with the Career Center, I saw the application, I saw the word peace, and I was like, oh, you know what? I don't know how tangible that idea of peace is. Like, what does that actually mean? And so it took a couple months for me to fill out that form, and I was thinking the whole time, what is peace and how can we prove it? Because I said, you know, give me something real, like environmental change or, you know, a global green summit, and that's like something we can actually do. But I turned in the form. And in the questions, they, you know, ask you what your definition of peace is. And for me, I wrote, you know, peace is a recognizing of humanity, the other person, and recognizing that sometimes you may not agree, but choosing to go above and beyond that, but being with the person now and seeing their perspective, right? And so mm-hmm. If you're looking at it from that point of view, you can start to open the conversation to have better outcomes and not just be in pure conflict itself, right? It's not the avoidance of conflict. And they're separate things, but I went there with that question, that idea of peace in mind in January, and the conference itself was 3 days hosted at the United Nations in Bangkok, and over 350 students from around the world, 35 different countries, and I was given the opportunity to serve on the leadership team, so I sat through a couple of interviews, and 11 people out of the 350 were there, and three of them actually were Trinity Western University students, which is super awesome, great representation there. And we were the only Canadians as well. We were in the conference. We had the opportunity to speak to Rwandan genocide survivors, Cambodian genocide survivors, Syrian refugees, and a Holocaust survivor as well. I had breakfast with her 2 days. And it was the stories you hear about the human empathy. And the key behind everything is optimism. For each of them to get to where they were at today, they had to be optimistic, which then for the listeners of this podcast, I mean, you need that optimism, especially when we're this young in life. Like, we have to hope for our dreams, and we have to at the very least try, because that's all that we can do. And you see that reflected in the stories of the survivors of major world catastrophes, and they have hope, and that's the thing that carries them through. Attended that conference and came back with the official title, Peace Delegate. Representing Canada, we went on Global News BC, talked about what we learned, and then we just yesterday recorded a segment for Apologetics Canada as well, where we talked about a very similar thing. So it's a great segue into both of this. You know, it's great. If you want contacts with Apologetics Canada, I got you, man.
Thank you.
But we went from there and we kept talking, like, what does peace actually mean? And how do you then say it in a world that may not know what peace is, right? And there's three big questions that we took away from. The first one is, like, what is peace, right? Circle back to where I started.
Yeah.
It has to start with you and you being 100% fully yourself. If you are a writer, and that's who you are, be a writer and give it your all. If you're an athlete, give that your all. If you're going to be a politician, put your whole self into behind whatever it is you're doing, because you will be at peace with it, which requires you to recognize your heart and follow your heart. And so if you know where your heart is, follow it. And then the next question that we'd like to ask is, you know, why do you exist? That's a huge question, existential question, right? And it couples well with the peace question, because if you know why you exist, you cannot exist solely for yourself alone. Your interactions will always affect other people. You'll always run into family members, friends, coworkers, bosses. You're going to be interacting with other people. So you exist in relation to other beings, right? So
okay.
Putting the two together, then what can you do to advocate for peace is to follow your heart and work with other people, right? And so that kind of is like the theme that the three of us took out of it that we're kind of pursuing right now and trying to inspire within other people that we've talked to. And this is a progressive journey. Peace is not something that you get right now, but it's something we work towards. And that led me then to the internship opportunity, which I'm looking at right now, where hopefully if I have been accepted, but I just want to make sure that I go into it with a level head and understanding right. What it is, I'll be back in Thailand for 8 months and continuing the peace advocacy role and continuing to bring in the youth of the world to advocate for what's good and constructive.
So over those 8 months, what would you be doing?
Yeah.
Talking to more survivors of this or this, or is there more to it?
Yeah, so one of the days a week, I'm not too familiar with the structure, and that's why I'm getting more information, but you work 8 to 5, Monday through Friday. One of those days is set aside solely for team training, right? So I'd have an international team with me of 12 people from around the world, and you know, we would get training on how do this specific demographic, how does this demographic respond to what we're trying to propose, and that is that we need global youth empowerment. And how can we present that story, whether it's peace or social advocacy or eco-friendly or even just leadership? Like, how can we then give this to the Asian demographic, to the South American demographic? Like, we would do research on that and get trained on it, which is an awesome opportunity because I'm thinking about going international after this, hopefully, with whatever that looks like. And then the rest of the days, I would be contacting different universities, different leaders, whoever is on this podcast listening. If they want to go to the Peace Summit, I hopefully reach out to you and tell you that, you know, you do have a platform that you can go and expand your voice on and commit to peace and bringing people together. And I'd be doing that from the 8 to 5 regularly. And then one of the days, I would be spending teaching English to kids in schools who don't have enough money. And I think that's one of the key aspects for me. I'm like really looking forward to doing that, to just speak with people and understand where they're at. And I'd do that and I'd plan for the conference and I'd get that started for the Global Peace Conference and then the University Leader Symposium, which is one of their biggest, where they have 1,000 people. And yeah, it's just a lot of interacting with shareholders of the NGO itself, Humanitarian Affairs Asia. And so I'd talk with a couple members from the UN. I'd be based in just anywhere and doing whatever I can to make sure this is a reality.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the main, as you said, you speak to a lot of youth, or you speak to people in different countries about youth and problems mm-hmm. and everything. What are some of the main issues that keep arising?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge for anybody like our age really is like, how do we start and where do we start, right? Because it takes a lot of courage to even just recognize what you want to pursue, and then you get there and you're like, okay, this is what I want to do. You know, say for example, you know, you want to make $1 million, you're like, that is really what's driving you, and we'll use this example. Mm-hmm. But then you get there and you're like, how do I actually do that? That's a big number. What do I need to do to position myself in a place where that reality is possible? So, you know, you're chasing after internships, you're chasing after jobs, you're talking with people. It's a lot of work in the moment to get to what your dreams are. And flipping it to what I'm doing now with the advocacy is like, we believe that the world can be a more peaceful place. So how can we actually do that and give people the platform to go and communicate what their ideas are? Because there are so many solutions out there that aren't working. And we all can recognize that the world isn't as peaceful as it could be, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the creative ideas are put together when we have people from diverse perspectives. You can meet people from all around the world and we'll come together, we'll share our voices, our insights, our history, our ideas, we'll come up with a better creative solution and be able to implement that in ways we haven't before, because the youth are the future and we want to make sure that the youth have the platform to share their ideas, which is kind of what this internship and this association would do.
What is something you've shared that stood out to the group that you're in?
Yeah, one of the biggest ones is at the end of the conference, I was given an hour's notice, and he said, I like your school, I like the students you represent, I want you to give a speech about what you learned at the end, an hour's notice, at the UN in front of all these people. I said, all right, well, let's do it. Why not? And, you know, I spent the time thinking, you know, not about what I wanted to say, but what was on my heart, what I felt in mm-hmm. that moment, right? And I gave a nice metaphor and a phrase, which I'll go into. And I think, like, the metaphor is that human beings, we're like a dandelion. And so I described, you know, a dandelion in the West is seen as a weed, but it's actually a flower. And so humanity itself is, you know, you're walking along the sidewalk and you see the little dandelion that's growing out on the sidewalk of that hardship and evil and struggles, but you see hope right there in humanity, which is itself, the dandelion. I like that. And then, you know, even when your trust in humanity becomes withered and white and starts to die, a simple breeze, which is the breeze of hope, will blow it off into the rest of the sidewalk and turn something that's gray and concrete into something that's a field of flowers, because we have hope. And, you know, it's recognizing that humanity is something that is good and something that we can all pursue. And one of the key takeaway points with that is I had the phrase, you know, I can do so much, but we can do so much more, right? It's the idea that even if I fail, I'm going to try my best, but I know the rest of the world has my back. If you have an idea and a dream, there will be people to support you, but you just got to go all in and go for it. Because there are people who have your back. So even if I can do so much, we can do so much more. You have strengths that I don't have. You have ideas that I don't have. Let's put them together. Better outcomes. It's kind of that idea.
What outcomes have we seen from these peace summits?
Yeah, and you know that's a really good question. I think to start off with like a good joke is that one of the speakers made a comment in the middle of the conference, and he said, the UN doesn't do enough. The UN isn't doing anything. And everyone in the room kind of clapped and laughed along with it, which is really funny when you're sitting there in front of the UN sign and you're clapping about how they don't do enough. But I think that reflects a kind of deeper reality, is that everyone is recognizing that we're not doing enough. And so what it happens in the conference is a simple conversation of people are recognizing that, and we're starting to open the box of like, what would it look like to bring in different perspectives and bring in different solutions. And right now it is in that talking stage, and when you leave and you come back to home, whether it's Langley or wherever else in the world, it's really difficult to keep that up, and which is why I'm trying to keep in the loop. So it's still in the talking stages and the conversating about what it would actually look like, but there is tangible hope, and we're not aiming for peace itself, we're going for the day after peace, right? Because you need to think sustainably. Mm-hmm. And nothing quite yet, but we're working on it.
Okay. Now, philosophical question.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to have peace? Is peace possible?
That I love philosophical questions. My friends always tease me that I'm too philosophical, but this question, I love this question, because it just like, oh, think about it. Is it actually possible? And it's just like asking that question, is peace actually possible? Like, you have to stop and think about it, right? And you know, the first question is you need to define, like, what is it that we're searching for? What is peace itself, right? So it's like, take for example, you're asking, like, is math actually possible, right? Can you define what math is? And we can define quite reasonably what math is, and but that's science, that's different. So then, you know, can you describe what love is, which is a subdivision of peace? Like, just dissecting the question itself takes you in many different directions. Which I enjoy, but complete peace I don't think is necessarily possible. I don't know what that would look like, because we've never had it before in history. Mm-hmm. There's always been wars. There's always been people who argue with each other, who choose to take more than they give, and people who feel like they don't have enough. And with that, you know, you start to think, okay, well, is that human nature? And I don't think it is. But peace is possible, a more peaceful existence is possible, but complete peace is not. And as a Christian, I believe there is one solution to peace, and that is Jesus Christ. And I mean, keeping that in mind as you continue along your paths, right? That is the ultimate goal, but it's not to say we can't do better,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I think when, at least the people in the conference that I talked with, when you talk about peace, is not operating under the assumption that 100% across the board is possible, but just to do better, right? And
interesting.
I think it's an interesting perspective, and
Yeah.
Yeah. Good question.
Is there a line that says this is more peaceful and this is the most peaceful we can get?
Mm.
And is that something that we could ever get to?
Yeah, that's a good question as well. Like, when the line is reached, would you recognize the line? And I don't know. I don't know if you could, because it's kind of natural for us to want to continue to do better and do more and kind of be a perfectionist. And it's like, well, if perfection in the sense of like, all right, well, this is 100% something in existence, would we recognize it as 100% full, right? So it's like you're pouring a cup of water and you're pouring and pouring and pouring, but you don't know where the top of the glass is. Hmm. So you just keep pouring in what you have to make more and more of it. And will we know if we reach the top of the glass without it spilling over? I don't know.
But then thinking peace is also relative, right? Because someone, let's say in the Middle East, to them peace is, I don't know, not hearing gunfire. Mm. For us, peace could be not having that argument with that person they usually have whenever you see them.
Yeah.
Right? So peace is an interesting one.
It is, and it is relative. The Cambodian genocide survivor who spoke, she said, peace for her was simply a good night's sleep. Coming from somebody who survived the Cambodian genocide, which, that's not what I expected as an answer.
For those who don't know, what is the Cambodian genocide and what happened?
Cambodian genocide is the Khmer Rouge took over the government, and they executed, not with bullets, but with blunt objects because bullets were too expensive. Anybody who looked like they were educated in any form. If your hands didn't have calluses on them, if you wore glasses, of their own people, because they were seen as a threat. And she lived through it, and she has a movie on Netflix. I'm really blanking out on her name. This is Luang Ong is her name, but the name of the movie, I can't remember, which if she hears this, I'm sorry, but she's on my Instagram. I'll give her a little shout out if you want that later.
Sure.
And so, like, that is the type of genocide and harm to human life that's happening. And yet it's what's peaceful to you that keeps you going. And so you said it's as simple as not having a conversation with somebody else, but then in the Middle East, it's bombs exploding. It's kind of recognizing where you're at in the moment as well. And with that is a recognition that us in Canada, we do have a massive privilege to be in this opportunity. To say peace is just a simple conversation that's avoided versus peace is not getting bombed. And it's recognizing that privilege that we can use our connections, our platform, to uplift people who do not see things the same way that we do. Because if we can help out, whether it's lobbying to the government, conversating with different people, giving money to charities and donations that actively seek to pursue peace, with the resources that we have, then I think we are doing our due diligence in part to make the world a better, more peaceful place. And, peace turns into passivity if you're not proactive. It's just recognizing the privilege that you have and using it.
Okay.
That's the phrase that we need to keep in our minds, because we are very privileged people here. So we need to be proactive in what we do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you guys bringing up these issues and problems to who is that exactly? Who are you bringing up these issues to?
I mean, I'm trying to bring them up as much as I can to whoever I can talk to. I brought it up in the Apologetics podcast. When we interviewed for Global News BC, I mentioned my part got cut in the clip. But, when I was there, if you had told me that I was at Trinity Western, at Langley, all the way in Thailand at this conference, I would have believed you. Because the diversity that we see here within our local BC area reflects a global diversity. Mm-hmm. And yet, there were so few Canadians and, so few Canadian representatives there to talk about things that are important to everybody. Peace is inherently natural to every human being. And so it kind of, I'm trying to advocate for the fact that Canada has potential to be a global advocate for peace, because domestically, the Canadian nation is highly diverse and reflects the global perspective. And Canada's existing. Canada's a pretty peaceful place. And, Canada has a platform to go and talk about what they need to. And yet, I'm not seeing it. I haven't quite looked for it. But, I'm just hoping to inspire people to go and do that, because there's a lot of potential here. Mm-hmm. That's kind of who I'm trying to speak to, is the people who can listen and say, all right, I have a positioned to help me bring the story forward.
Okay. So you bring these different problems up. Mm-hmm. How do they get solved? Do they get solved from money being sent to these countries or aid? Is that how it...
I mean, it really depends on, you know, what you're given and the resources. Money is a solution, but it's also time is one of the most valuable things that we have as human beings, right? And so conferences are a platform to meet other people who get you the resources, the connections that you need. So one of the solutions is to donate money to NGOs, to charities. Another one is to say, take your time. If you're finishing school and you have an hour before your next thing, you know, send an email to your local MP and say, hey, this is what I'm really passionate about. This is a concern. You can go to other conferences or start applying to go to different internships within government itself. And one of the conversations I had with a delegate in the convention is, government versus people. What makes the actual change? Does it happen with the government because the government says something, the people do it, or do the people change the government? Hmm. And it's an interesting question. We both had different perspectives, but you need both. You need people in the government, you need people on the ground, you need every spectrum of the social structure to be advocating for something. And so since the people who are listening, everybody has a different position, just take whatever it is you have and give whatever it is you can, whether it's money, time, conversations, to wherever your heart is passionate about for a cause for the better of humanity.
So how is it possible to take perspective from every single person and every single, let's say, social status, mm-hmm. or every single person, it doesn't matter if you're on Hastings or in some mansion, how mm-hmm. is that possible?
Yeah. The first part of it is to recognize kind of your position now, and whoever is listening to this is like, where am I at right now, and who is it that I can listen to, who is it who is talking to me, and to start taking what you can right now, because it's not necessarily our job to speak on behalf of everybody, but there are people in positions where they're supposed to, elected officials, businessmen, who have that broad perspective, and perhaps we're not there right now. So it's just, what is my story that I have, story I've heard, and how can I present it to the person who could speak it out the best? Sometimes it's politicians, sometimes it's activists, sometimes it's business people. And you don't always have to combine all the different stories unless you are called to do it, if that's what you're really passionate about. But it's telling your story and recognizing your place right now as a human being who cares about the world and making it a better place.
Mm-hmm. So now let's go back to what was your journey and how you got to being president of Student Association.
Yeah. I've done student leadership now for 10 years, a long time, really, for such a young age. And I've been in different elected positions, treasurer, secretary, VP. I've kind of worked through the whole ladder from junior high up until now. And I entered Trinity, and I really wanted to know what it would take to represent and advocate for people at a professional level, right? Because mm-hmm. there's a bit of a gap between high school and university, and the responsibility does change, liabilities as well. And I wanted to be able to kind of share the voice of the people, and be able to explain to Trinity Western University what the students' concerns and needs are, because that's my job. I am the voice of the students, and so I wanted to make sure I did a good job in telling that story. So here in the office, I have some posters for my campaigns. My three promises were to make two some more intentional, more opportunities, and have more community. And so instead of me telling you what that would look like, I went to students and I said, hey, if this was something that was actually done, what would it look like? And I had them write down on those vision boards exactly what they wanted. And on this, I kept them in my office in here, circled in yellow what we could realistically do, because it's not about what I want, it's about what the people want. It's kind of this act of service that it's not about me, it's about the people. And that takes a lot of strength and perseverance, and most of the time that I make the biggest changes are when people don't notice. It's me going after classes to go and meet with somebody off campus in downtown Vancouver, driving 45 minutes, in the middle of traffic, and conversating with that individual about what campus can do and different ideas that people don't see that make the hugest impact on everybody. And it's a lot of perseverance, and I knew stepping into the role that it would require that, as well as just a massive personal growth. You know, I used to have a little bit longer hair and I used to look more like a surfer before this. But eventually you do have to be professional, and I've learned more in these 8 months than I have in my 3 years of university. And I would encourage anybody who's listening as well to just be active in pursuing any leadership opportunities that you can get, because you will be changed by it. Textbooks only take you so far.
Right.
Real world experience is so much more important than, it's been hard, but it has been amazing and life-changing.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think experiences are valued way more than anything in textbook, because with a textbook, you're only learning the theory, mm-hmm. while experiences, you're seeing how it's working,
exactly.
you're seeing how it's done. And I think some may argue that theory is more valuable, others may argue this, but I think, in my opinion, experiences are way more valuable. Of course, it depends what you're going into, because if you're going to become a doctor, I think
right.
theory is...
You got to know your O-chem.
Yeah, but no, real life experiences is always good, and if you have something that, you know, you're very passionate about, research the theory, but then also go and experience it.
Yeah, and it's the person connection that makes all the difference. You can have the best grades, the best GPA, and if you don't have like the personality behind it, if you don't know people, if you don't have the friends who can support your claims, it's going to be a lot harder to get to places. Whether you're in medicine or you're in engineering or you're in business, the person at the end of the day is the most important thing. And so finding the friends that are valuable to you, finding the friends that push you to succeed, and sticking with your family, asking your family for advice. You know, they're there. They've lived longer than you. They're there inherently to help you out. And professors as well, at the end of the day, are doing their job because they want to inspire you as a student. And so just taking the risk and asking a simple question, hey, how can I get some help in this field? You know, can I have a recommendation? There is no harm in asking. Yes, it might be a little difficult. It might take some courage. And worst they can say is no.
Mm-hmm.
But you tried, and that's all we can do at the end of the day. No regrets with trying. No regrets.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any mentors or people that pushed you to where you are now? Did you have any help? Did you have a boost? Or was it all you climbing the ladder?
I mean, I think my dad has been a huge inspiration in his own way, because he encourages me to keep thinking about the person and the importance of human relationships, which I keep, you know, in my heart every day. And sometimes, you know, it's a little more difficult than others. But like a set mentor throughout everything, I haven't had. And you do need kind of that self-drive to push yourself to succeed. But you, with anybody hoping to get into leadership and kind of explore a career, it's going to be you at the end of the day who makes the difference, because even if you have a mentor who's there, you're going to go home, you're going to go make dinner, go to bed, and it's going to be just you. And you know, in that moment where there is no support, that's what makes the crucial difference, because you are in your head, only you understand yourself. And so mentors are great, mentors will really boost you up, but you have to have the right mindset and say, hey, I am working with myself, I am my own biggest challenge, and I know I can get through it. And there are people who can help me, right? I think that's kind of like, just keep pushing yourself. And you are your own best mentor, and you'll learn life lessons, and they'll be difficult. But people are there to help you. So stick with yourself and follow your heart.
Every difficult time, or at least in my opinion, every difficult time you go through, just over that mountain or over that hill, there is always something rewarding waiting for you.
Exactly.
So
you go through pain, you know.
And yeah,
we remember when you, like, we were kids and we were starting to go through that awkward puberty stage and your legs would hurt and everything, you know. Yeah, it's a good life lesson. Like, we are going to grow now from 18 to, you know, as late as like 30. That time frame is crucial to push yourself and push yourself far, because by the time you're 30, chances are you'll be married, you may have kids, you'll have a house possibly, and you know, like, that puts fences around your life as to what you can and cannot do. This is the time that you're the most free to pursue whatever you can, and so you need to take every opportunity to do it.
Yes. Pain. What was the quote? If you want something that's valuable, you must do something that's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You have to work through that suffering, work through that pain, in order mm-hmm. to achieve something that is valuable. Because if everything let's say a good example I like to use is like a six pack. If getting a six pack was easy and everybody would be walking around with one, it wouldn't be valuable.
Exactly.
The pain and suffrage is what adds value to it. And that's why, you know, when you see that one guy at the beach, you're like, oh, wow, he's, you know, he put in the work, he put in the time, and he's achieved what he wanted to achieve.
Exactly. And so, you got to recognize the opportunities and what you want and go for it and give it your all. I mean, at the end of the day, I would rather not ask myself what if, but be fine knowing I gave everything I had to something, whether it's this position as president, which I've given everything to, and I'm really thankful for, you know, even this opportunity with the internship. So I'm going to give everything into it, because if I don't, you know, I may not get everything out of it, right? Mm-hmm. It's just give whatever it is you're doing your 100%, which is going to be painful, and recognize the people around you who are there to help you out.
So for me, doing a little bit of research on you, you are taking a minor in psychology and a major in business.
Yep.
So what is it, what is that like? And I think psychology and business goes hand in hand very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, a lot of these very famous people who've achieved such great achievements have all taken psychology and business at some point. So I mean, you're on a good track. And Why business and psychology for you?
Yeah, I mean, originally I started university. I wanted to be a history professor, believe it or not.
Oh.
But I did that with the intention of, like, you know, history does repeat itself. Humanity is humanity at the end of the day, and so I would be researching people. I didn't know it at the time, but that's kind of what drove me into that field. I switched degrees 4 times, ended up in business. It's not that hard to switch degrees at university, you know, as long as you plan it out good.
Okay.
So I switched, I ended up in business, just straight business, and I said, you know what, I think I can do something to be more in-depth, like, and understand what people actually are like. And so I thought for a bit philosophy. I was like, what if I did business philosophy? And that's kind of a hard sell to put together at an interview and say, yeah, I did business and philosophy. Okay, yeah, but it's maybe not the easiest to talk about. But business and psychology, that is the language of people. That is the way the world operates. Psychology is getting to understand the individual as a human, their emotions, their feelings, how they think, and recognizing the process scientifically of what that is. And businesses, organizations, how they operate and how they function and what makes a business. So if you put those two together, organizations and people, that's how the world works. And, you know, that's why I studied this, because I know no matter what field I end up in, advocacy or business or politics, I know I'm going to use both degrees, because that is both organizations and people. So I would highly encourage that degree, doing both if students can, because you're going to use it. And I, with this job as president as well, I haven't gone a single day where I haven't used one of my degrees. And everything, just sitting there listening to people, hearing these interviews, making it personable in my day-to-day operations, but then thinking business-wise, and like, how do we increase our inflow of people in the lounge? How do we get our coffee to be a little better tasting? How can we lower the price but increase the quality of the goods? And KPIs, what are the KPIs, right? And, it's very, very helpful, and I would recommend it. So, yeah, no regrets.
Okay, that's good, because I've seen a lot of videos on social media of people saying, oh, I've studied 4 years doing this, and I am $50,000 in debt, and now I work at some cashier in Walmart.
Yep. Yeah.
It's good to know that you're using everything that you've learned in university, and it wasn't just a waste, just a complete throw up.
And so, I mean, this, I will tell everybody, this is the most valuable degree you can get, because you are going to use it. And it doesn't matter if you become a teacher, if, you know, even if you do end up doing engineering or a doctor, business and psychology, that is where you're going to operate. You're going to be in a business. You're going to be working with people. So might as well study both while you can, right?
Right.
Very useful.
What do you think about high school and specifically the courses that we get taught?
Mm.
What courses do you think are 100% should be mandatory, especially in those last few years right before university? What courses do you suggest that people take?
I went to high school in the States, Puyallup High School, so it's a little different there than here. But like, thinking now to my classes in high school, like, I don't remember them quite a lot, to be honest. It felt like everything when I was there in the moment, but just the 4 years of university are life-changing. And you really discover yourself, and high school is there to give you like foundational knowledge, but university is there to help you understand who you are. I think history classes are very important, of course. You know, I had a passion for history. We were offered political science courses in my high school as well, very important. So modern political science and how that operates. Psychology, human psychology is also very helpful. I haven't used anything above geometry, really. I've taken stats. I took AP stats. That's very helpful. English is good because you got to know how to write. I mean, right. I think the core of every high school has it, but it would be nice to see more kind of vocational classes within it, like more classes tailored towards business or mechanics or pre-med, like help people understand what the field is like now in high school before they have to go and spend tens of thousands of dollars in university, right? Mm-hmm. I think that would be one of the best ways to improve the system. Vocational training, give them options to experience real work, because you can't get the real work until you're there, or at the very least, university. So let's try to start it early.
Now, could it be not only studying theory, but doing the experience? For example, I don't know, if there's a mechanics course, not only understanding how a car works, but actually going in there and seeing how it works?
Yeah. Yeah. The reason I use that example is my high school had they had that course, and they had a garage with a bunch of cars in it. Oh, and it was like a whole tailored course that people could take. And we had a culinary school where people would make that there. They'd basically learn how to be a chef, sitting there cooking, actually doing it. So
that's,
I think,
awesome.
There's a lot of benefit to my high school, Puyallup High School, that could be implemented into different high schools as well, because you need the tangible experience with the actual theories, right? And the theories get used more than the experience, sadly.
For student association, mm-hmm. is this in every university or is this only here at Trinity Western?
They'll have different forms of it at every university I know. UFE, I think they're called UFE Student Union Society, UFE SUS.
Okay.
And they're going through elections right now. I met actually the president of UFE at the summit as well. Amazing, amazing woman who's studying economics. So there is forms of it in every university. Some of them are more involved, some of them are less involved just due to the size of it. But TUSA is in everyday interactions with students. Because it is such a small campus, and our lounge is right there in the middle of it with free coffee and free printing, like, people interact with us a lot more frequently than they would at other universities.
Do you think this is something that students should consider?
100%.
Okay.
I think, you know, any student association, whatever form it looks like in university, you'll learn how to work with policies, you'll learn how to work with people, you might be able to lead a team, and there's just so many rules in place within every organization that you're not aware of till you're actually there. But the student unions, student governments, student association, whatever you want to call it, they know how the university works, they know how it functions, and so if you really want that practical experience, that is one of the best places to get in contact with real world skills. Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give to students who want to achieve the higher position, such as president or manager of wherever they work? What steps or what advice could you give them that they should take in order to give them a higher chance of getting where they want to get?
Yeah, just do it. That's one of my mentors told me that. Just do it, get it done. I've run 7 elections in the 10 years. I've lost 3 of them. I've learned more in the 3 elections that I've lost than I have in the 4 that I've won, because what I learned is that you have to keep trying and you need to keep pushing. And even if, you know, in the moment it's a no, but you got to just keep trying. If your heart is there and if you're meant to be there, you will get it done. And at times it feels a little humiliating. You got to just stand up there and say, here, I am trying again to advocate for this, to make this goal a reality, to go and perform. And I am giving this out there, I'm putting myself on the line because I think this is important. And sometimes it's in the shape of an interview. You go and apply for a job and you don't get the job back. But the fact that you're there in the moment, learning from that interview, you could think back and say, okay, well, maybe this one thing worked. Maybe that's why I didn't get accepted. You know, it's just going out and trying to put yourself in positions that you wouldn't be before. You learn what works and what doesn't. So that advice is just go and push yourself to talk to as many people as you can, run as many campaigns or interviews as possible. Because even the ones that you don't get accepted for, you learn a lot from if you're choosing to look for it. And that's the hard part, though, is to say, like, walk away from an interview that went terribly and think, like, oh, it's the other person did it. You know, oh, he asked me terrible questions. You know, right. But it's like, no, what did I respond with that I could have done better at? And how could I have tweaked it It's kind of that mentality. It's like, what could I have done to make it a little better, to present a little better story?
And having that mentality of not where you blame it on someone else, but take it upon yourself to make yourself better, that is something that if people do, will get a lot further. Will get a lot further.
Exactly.
So, what did you expect? What were your expectations for being a president of the student association? What did you expect? Not what you know, but what did you expect? And how is it actually?
Yeah, it's a little different for every role, I guess. And I mean, I'm just speaking specifically for TUSA on this. But I expected a bit more interaction one-on-one with the students than perhaps I actually received, because you are the voice of the students, but if the question is, who are you speaking to? You're the mouth of the students, and where is that mouth directed? And my job is to speak to administration, to Trinity, and that's a full-time job. It takes a lot of emails, a lot of messages, going one-on-one to people and meeting in person. So I don't have a lot of time to go and speak to students directly. So I thought I would, but I don't, and that's why I have a team, right? And so I have an executive team of VPs, I have a leadership team of directors, and the representatives of each school, and they're the ones on the ground actually getting the stories from the students, collecting information, passing it to me, so then I can go and do my job, right? And so I'm very externally focused, talking to Trinity, talking to different people from around the local community, and not quite inwardly focused as I thought it would be. Because when you advocate, you're not talking inwardly, you're speaking out. And so I thought it would be a lot more like that, but it's a lot more external related than I would have guessed. And I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it a lot.
Okay, so, we're kind of running out of time, so I'll skip to the end a bit.
Yeah.
What is your favorite book and your favorite podcast that maybe helped you or that you think might help other people?
Yeah, one of my favorite books, I have a couple. Actually, I do a lot of reading. I don't really do as much listening, but I'm trying to get back into the podcast. But The Art of Loving by Eric Fromm, he's a psychologist who kind of pioneered how we think of love in the psychology realm. And he described the process of loving like the way an artist paints a picture. And the artist never really knows when he's finished till he's there, you know? And so it's like, you know, you're thinking of loving like that, loving as a person, whatever type of relationship that is. You just got to go and create and give it everything. And so I think that was just like heart opening, I guess, for me to read that. Another book is The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team. Really great book because it's a very narrative story about how people interact and the hidden messages, because what I say and what I express in my body sometimes may be different things. And from other people, sometimes it's just as important what's not said. So kind of learning the balance between conversations with different people in a professional setting, 5 Dysfunctions of a Team, really great book. And then High Conflict by Amanda Ripley and How to Get Out of It. Another amazing narrative book about how conflict is a good thing if you're choosing to have constructive conflict. Like, you cannot avoid it, because if you avoid conflict, we're not going to grow. It's recognizing that we're in a state of conflict and choosing to move out of it as productively, as constructively as possible, that makes the best outcome, right? And so I'm not going to avoid conflict. Right. I'm going to be very careful with it and say, let's go through this and let's work through the stage to create the best outcome and be as diplomatic and peaceful as I can. Because if we avoid conflict, you know, we're just not taking accountability. We're not embracing it.
I like that. Yeah. I like that.
3 great books.
Awesome.
Yeah. And this podcast as well is a great one that I'm going to start listening to as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah,
it's been a pleasure, and hopefully people listening have took something away from this and might join their student association at their university or their college.
Yeah, get involved.
Yeah. So awesome. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Matthew. Yeah, of course.